Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 42 of Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. The New York Knicks have a new coach. It's Mike D'Antoni. Darryl Rasner and Mike Messina have been performing above expectations for the New York Yankees. We tell you why Johan Santana is not the lights-out pitcher we expected. And, of course, New York Jets cornerback Darrell Revis joins us. We have all that and more coming your way next on Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Brandoff, and boy, do we have an exceptionally great show for you all tonight.
On tonight's show, New York Jets first-round pick in 2007, cornerback Darrell Revis joins us. He's with us right now, and Darrell, it is with great honor and pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, I'm glad to be on the show, Mark and Evan.
Thank you very much, and we have some questions prepared for you, if that's all right.
That is okay.
All right. Well, first I want to bring you back to draft day in 2007, and what went through your head once you heard your name called by the commissioner at the draft?
When I heard my name called, I just started crying. I was excited, you know, to play against some of the best guys in the world at this level.
Yeah, when you heard your name called that you were a New York Jet, were you excited to be a Jet, or was your heart really with another team?
No, I was just excited to be in the NFL at first, and then getting picked by the Jets, they bumped up to get me. I was more excited that they bumped up 10 slots to get me, and actually when I started meeting my teammates and my coaches, I got very comfortable, and I liked the Jets.
Now, after being a first-round draft pick, did you feel like there was a little spotlight following you every time you stepped onto the field?
Yeah, man. The city of New York, when you come in here as a first-round draft pick, it's high expectations, and you got to live up to them if you want to get picked that high. And week in and week out during practice and even game time, you got to be ready to play.
Now, what was that like? Stepping onto the field, hearing all the Jet fans going crazy for you the first time you ever stepped onto the NFL field?
It was exciting. It was something new. the fans up here, they go hard for their teams who they root for. So it was just great to have that support around us as a team. And even though we went, 4-12, they still stuck there with us and still cheered for us.
Now, that first time you stepped onto the field was in week one against the New England Patriots. Now, were you able to feel the intensity of the Jets-Pats rivalry right away?
Oh, yeah. That whole week, preparing for the Patriots, it's a bitter taste in your mouth. And, you jump right into it as an NFL rookie like I did last year, and you're going against, the best team basically in the NFL. You're going against Tom Brady, Randy Moss. So those two off the bat, the first game, you got to be on your A-plus game and be ready to go.
Now, the last time the Jets started a rookie at cornerback on opening day was Ray Mickens in 1996. Did you think that you were going to be starting all 16 games for the Jets this season?
No. I thought it was going to be more of a learning curve at first, and maybe the sixth or seventh, eighth week, I thought I was going to, probably get up in the mix. But, after I held out, they told me put on my seatbelt and get ready to get ready to go fast because, you know, they're going to throw me right in there.
Now, when you were drafted, were you accepted amongst your teammates? Did they respect you, or did you have to earn it? And was there any player in particular that made you feel really comfortable that took you under his wing?
The whole team did. The whole team, I felt very comfortable around. The veterans made sure, you know, I was okay. They would ask me questions before and after practice, if I was okay, how did my body feel, what I maybe needed to do, you know, just to get an edge or be on the positive side, you know, and be healthy. So it was great, man. A lot of leaders, you know, Chad Pennington, Kerry Rhodes, even when Jonathan Vilma was there, you know, they just basically, you know, just made me be comfortable in the atmosphere that I was in.
Yeah, so the Jets, of course, drafted Dwight Lowry in the fourth round, another cornerback. Are you going to take him under your wing and show him the ropes?
Oh, definitely. it's, you know, coming into this NFL game, man, it's different from college. So, you know, you just got to, you know, take younger guys, you know, that's under you, and just teach him. He's going to have a learning curve this year. The more he feeds into it and learns it, the better off he'll be as a corner and be very successful in the NFL.
Now, what was the transition like from college into the NFL? What are the major differences?
First off, is I say in the film room, it's different terminology. You know, just different words that our college coaches, you know, was teaching us then is different, you know, from the NFL coaches too. So it's a different terminology. Just the film study is more intense. It's some of the stuff I never even heard in film that I know now that, you know, is real intense and that you need some things you need to know. And basically on the field, it's a faster game. Guys are stronger and, you know, if you out of position 1 inch, it can cost you a game, a touchdown, or anything, and it can make you lose.
Yeah, well, now not only did you complete your first season in the NFL, you led the team with 77 solo tackles and 13 passes defended. You also had 3 interceptions. When reflecting back on the season, how do you feel about your accomplishments?
I think I did all right. it's just something that, you know, was my first year, got a lot of experience playing against some receivers and future Hall of Fame, you know, receivers. And, you know, this year coming in, I got a lot of more knowledge. It's time for me to relax, in my game and be more, productive this year again.
Of course you did well your first season, but what did you do during the off season to really get into better shape to improve your game for this season?
Basically just, you know, worked on ball skills more, footwork. Basically here, actually in New York. Now I have a trainer where I go train at in Phoenix, Arizona. And we be doing some, you know, crazy stuff, pulling sleds, running hills. out there in the desert, but this year I'm going to just do the same thing that I always do that makes me successful and the player that I am. I'm going to just keep on doing it year in and year out.
Now, if there was one down that you could replay in your rookie season, which one would it be?
One down. Ooh.
Or a series of downs.
Probably the Buffalo game when I was watching Lee Evans and we both jumped up in the air for the ball and both had our hands on it. And one of my teammates came and knocked me off the play and he went down the sideline and scored.
It's funny. I was speaking to Evan before the show and I predicted that was the play that you would say and that's exactly what you said. So.
Yeah.
It happens to everyone. That's what makes you stronger. But on the other hand, what was that one play that made you feel confident that you really said, I can do this. I know that I'm capable to be a successful cornerback in the NFL.
Probably playing against, I'll say probably playing against the Patriots and, you know, Tom Brady and Randy Moss. the second time we played them up there, and I picked them off. And I mean, we came out with the loss, but I mean, we should have won. We did a couple of things wrong, but this is probably when I picked them off.
Now, since you were a first-round draft pick and now you know what it's like, what might you say to guys like Vernon Golston or Dustin Keller who were first-round draft picks this year, or maybe you already said something to help you transition?
Well, I was down when Vernon got drafted. I was in the city, and we were at Dave and Buster's after he got, you know, drafted, and he was there, and I was just telling him, I said, you know, enjoy it, man. I said, when it's time to come to camp, you know, just get ready to go. You know, let's get some wins under our belt. I said, just relax, learn the system as fast as you can, and just if you have any questions, just ask anybody. Nobody's here to you know, look at you a different way because, you know, a person may went sixth round and you first round. There's nothing like that. Everybody's here to help you. It's a family atmosphere.
So I guess the chemistry is a little bit different than what went on in Ravens camp yesterday. Did you hear about that?
No, what happened?
Every single player got into a huge brawl.
There were 85 players at the camp yesterday, and pretty much all 85 of them, after a running back got hit hard, just went to the middle of the field and started fighting.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, what were you saying?
No, nothing. I didn't say.
Oh, yeah. So, overall, how satisfied are you in the way that you played your rookie season?
I'm not, trust me. I mean, my uncle, he's my biggest critic, and it's just, I mean, the year has passed, and, you know, it's a new year. It's a lot of more things that when I look back on film, I could have did better, and, you know, now this is my second year to, you know, overcome that and do a lot of more positive things in my game.
So what do you feel you still have to prove to the Jets?
Excuse me?
What do you feel that you still have to prove to the Jets and their fans?
Still prove that I'm a shutdown corner, and that I will be as long as I'll be here. As long as I'll be here, I have to prove that.
Now, even though you're not that satisfied in yourself, a lot of Jet fans were very satisfied in your success. Do you think that your success was overshadowed by the poor season that the team had as a whole?
I think the media tried to make it that way. But, you know, I'm a team player. It's 11 guys out there with me on defense. I mean, 10 other guys, you know, and we all have to be successful together. I mean, the defensive line, you know, they got to take care of us as much as we got to take care of them. And even the offense as well. I mean, we cheer for them on the sideline. So, this is not like, you know, it's tennis or something like golf. It's a team sport, and, you know, I'm here for the team, and, you know, we got to win together.
And now 2 years ago, you weren't on the team yet, but the Jets were a playoff team, 10-6, were doing really well. What happened? What were the main causes that changed the team from a playoff team to a 4-12 team?
I do not know because I wasn't here when they were 10-6 and they went to the playoffs. If I was there then, I could tell you. But you know, just what I experienced my rookie year, it was a down year. I mean, you look at most of the games we were up by halftime, either tied or up, and we couldn't pull them off. We couldn't pull the wins off.
Now, what was the most memorable moment in your mind of your rookie season?
Most memorable? I'd probably say when we beat our hometown team, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Now, football is very demanding both physically and mentally. What do you do before every game to prepare for the physically and demanding thing that is coming your way?
I just relax, just listen to music, just relax, you know, just don't even think about the game until it's time for me to run out for pregame, and I mean, that's probably it. It's just listen to music, relax, until the game starts.
Now, did you get any advice? I asked you earlier if you were going to mention anything to Dustin Keller or Vernon Golston. Did any other first-rounders come to you to give you advice, such as DeBrickshaw Ferguson?
Yes, definitely. You know, our whole team, they're very supportive. And, you know, guys just, it's just something out of, you know, courtesy to them. They're just, you know, maybe one day at the practice, they just come up like, you all right, how you do out there? Are you getting it? You know, are you getting the defense? Just things like that to make sure, you know, I'm doing the right thing and going the right path.
Now, the Jets struggled last season right off the bat and continued on a downward spiral right throughout the rest of the season and never really recovered. Was this due to lack of confidence or something else?
No, we had the confidence. We had the confidence. It was just, you know, we couldn't pull the games out. I don't know. I can't put my finger on what was going on. I just say we just didn't finish strong. You know, we were up by halftime or tied at halftime and just couldn't finish strong.
Now, at any point last season, when the Jets were playing against other rookies in the league, did they and maybe guys that you played against in college, did they turn to you maybe to ask what you knew about some of the players?
Definitely. It's just us trying to, you know, get to know the guy, you know, the other opponent. You know, that's our job. We do that week in and week out so we can get to know the players, or it's just something you know, you need to know information on guys.
So were there any players that you really got a close connection to last season that you became great buddies with?
Yeah, a lot of guys. That's one of the things we did this offseason was, you know, we got closer as a team, everybody. So, I mean, the secondary, we hang out a lot. You know, David Harris, he's one of my good friends. Kerry Rhodes, Abram Elam. It's a lot of guys. Kellen, Clemens. Everything is going good for us this offseason, and we're going to continue to keep on pushing for it.
Now, in contrast to that, what is the atmosphere like in training camp? Is there tension between players fighting for jobs, or is everybody supportive of each other?
I couldn't tell you that because I held out last year during training camp. So I wouldn't even know. I wasn't even there.
How about in mini camp this season, though?
Mini camp. Last year we was in mini camp. It's just I don't know. Everybody doing their job. I don't think it's. I mean, you know, you got to compete every day. But I don't think there's no jawing or anything, or you know, there's no talk, no junk talking or anything.
Now, what are your overall thoughts of the 2008 Jets draft?
I think we had a strong draft. You know, we got a D end. You know, we got a wide receiver as a tight end. So you know, we can put him out of wide receiver and he can do some things. And Dustin and you know, we got a cornerback and a couple, you know, a lineman and a couple other people. So. I mean, it's strong right now. We're going to see what these guys look like. We haven't got to see them yet, so we're looking forward to it.
So now are we going to see the Jets in the 2008 playoffs?
I'm not going to make any predictions. You know, right now I just say, you know, we had a great offseason. You know, we're still moving forward. We're moving forward into OTAs, and we're just going to keep on being on a positive note right now.
Now, going back to your very early days, as a kid, when did you really realize you wanted to play football?
When I first started playing sports, probably 6 or 7 years old.
Did you have an idol growing up?
Yes, my uncle Sean Gilbert. And I mean, I idolize you know, a lot of people that played cornerback. You know, that played the position I play now. Dell Green, you know, Deion Sanders, you know, Rod Woodson, a lot of guys. You know, Champ Bailey. Now I still look up to him. So yeah, it's some good corners out there.
Now, were you always a cornerback?
Yes, always a cornerback when I played defense.
But I was actually reading up on some of your high school accomplishments, and it said in the Class AA state championship football game, you led your high school team to a come-from-behind 32-27 win over Northern Lehigh by scoring 5 touchdowns, including 3 rushing touchdowns, and
yeah,
a punt return and a bunch of other stuff. And a 39-yard pass, so you weren't just playing cornerback in this game, were you?
Oh, no. No, I mean, I played – well, I said on defense I played cornerback. I mean, offense, I played whatever you want to – what, anything on offense where you can get the ball, I can touch the ball. That's what I played. I played wide receiver, quarterback, running back, tight end at some point. So –
but
it's kind of crazy.
Your heart was really in defense.
So you were always kind of a defensive player?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I always. I mean, in high school, I played both sides. I played offense and defense, but I knew that I wanted to be on the defensive side so I can deliver the hits, not take a hit.
Now, this high school game, I want to stick with it because it's something that probably a lot of people don't know about. Take us through the game. I mean, 5 touchdowns, 3 of them rushing, a punt return, a return of a blocked punt, a 39-yard pass. You had a reception and an interception. I mean, you were all over the field. I mean, that's got to be a great feeling. What was that like?
It was crazy. I didn't know until I didn't know what all I was doing until probably after the game was over, because actually in the fourth quarter we were up 32-27 and we were punting the ball. I got stopped for the first down. We was punting the ball and they blocked it and they started running. So they got to probably about our 30-yard line and, you know, they was on their way trying to march down the field to score. So we was on defense and we shut them out. After the game, I don't know. It was like a million cameras in my face, pictures, and it was crazy. So I probably didn't notice until then.
Yeah, we can. Well, the reason that we're asking about that is because we're in high school ourselves, so we could really relate to that moment of your life. But I also reading up on your high school experiences, you were a star basketball player as well, I see.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah, first team All-State junior and senior year. It was a good run. We lost junior. We lost semifinals in basketball in the state. We lost semifinals in states. Then my senior year, we lost in the second round, so we didn't make it that far, but. Yeah, my junior year averaged 26, and my senior year averaged 22.
Wow. So it was easy to make the choice to play football instead of basketball?
Yeah, my uncle came up to me one day and said, he just broke it down to me, said, you know, if you was to make it to the NBA, it's only one or two, maybe 3-point guards on the roster. He was like, NFL, you know, you got 8 or 9 defensive backs on the roster. He was like, you know, talk to me in a couple of days about it and make your choice. And I thought about it, and, you know, I was like, yeah, I'd rather take my chances in football.
All right. Well, Darrell, it has been an honor and a privilege to have you on our show tonight. I am a huge Jet fan, and I wish you guys the best of luck in this upcoming season.
All right. Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right, bye, Darrell.
All right.
So that was New York Jets first round draft pick in 2007, cornerback Darrell Revis. If anybody tuned in late, he actually was on the phone with us from about 7:58. So he was here right at the start of the show. And if you missed any part of it, the interview, feel free to listen on the archive because Darrell Revis is with us right at the start of the show. You don't have to fast forward or look for the interview. It's right there at the beginning. So feel free to go back and do that. You'll be able to hear the show past 9:30 tonight on blogtalkradio.com/47 with Mark and Evan. And you did a great job, Evan. It was an honor to have you on.
It was just awesome having someone of a stature on our show. And hopefully many more guests like him will come, and maybe him again. We talked to his agent. Hopefully. It was just a great time, right? I mean, talking to someone of his knowledge, he knows the game very well, and hopefully him and the Jets can be successful next season. They certainly weren't as successful as we'd all like them to be last season, but hopefully they can turn it around and make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it was, I'm not a Jets fan myself. I'm a Giants fan, but, you know, It was really great to have him on. It was very nice of him to take time out of his day to join us today. I mean, just really nice on Mother's Day as well. So I don't know if he was spending time with his family or what was going on there, but it's very nice. So again, if you're just tuning in, Darrell Revis has just left us a good 25-minute interview. He was here from the first second-hour show started, and you can listen to that on the archive later tonight, and it'll be there forever. So,
well, certainly until we end our show, which hopefully won't be anytime soon. But there's a lot of other sports to talk about.
There is a lot of other sports to talk about. Our show right now is listed at 90 minutes. I don't know if we'll make it that far. Chances are we will not. Didn't know how long the interview would take, although it did take about as long as I expected it to. But, as I said at the top of the show, the Knicks signing Mike D'Antoni. Also, I want to talk about the Yankees and Mets. So we'll do that after a quick commercial break.
Why is Sports Center with Mark and Evan the best sports radio show for you to tune into? We've had New Face sports writer Jim Bomback on our show.
The baseball season is so long, and then it's long enough where you can play so poorly for, we're not talking, 2 weeks here. They were playing poorly for over a month.
NHL.com's Evan Grossman has been on our show.
This is one of this unstoppable force that everybody thought they were after winning all the games. And then the Rangers were actually a little bit better against them than the Islanders. They weren't quite as physical. And I don't think the Rangers defense is as good as under them. But
we have also had New York Mets beat writer from the New York Post, Mark Hale, on our show.
The Mets not just being a good team or a competitive team, but the Mets being consistently over the last year and a half one of the two or three best teams in baseball.
And, of course, we've had New York Rangers radio broadcaster and Fox announcer Kenny Albert on our show.
Back-to-back-to-back, Ramirez, Drew, Lowell, Veritek, off the rookie Chase Wright, who's making only his second career start. Four consecutive Red Sox home runs in the third inning.
We have even had NBC sports anchor Bruce Beck on our show.
And now the guy that was the stable guy, Mark and Evan, is gone, Joe Torre. And now it looks again like there's a big Steinbrenner, who's running the show, and that's Hank. I think he's the guy that's got his dad's personality in terms of a little bit of a temper, and who knows what's going to happen here with all these free agents.
In addition, we've had Yankees beat writer for MLB.com, Brian Hoke, on our show.
If the Yankees falter like they did in the first half, I could see a real situation where they're in third or even as low as fourth. Probably not fourth, but I could see a situation where the Yankees finish in third place.
And the list just continues on. We have also had New York Mets beat writer from the New York Daily News, Adam Rubin, on our show.
I don't think they're a lock by any stretch. I think they're certainly the favorite in the NL East. Certainly injuries could undermine the Mets, and they're the oldest team in baseball, so it's certainly susceptible to that.
You're listening to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. It's the best sports radio show the internet can handle.
Now, Mark, welcome back, everyone, to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. And, Mark, I think it's time to update our commercial.
Yes, well, we will be adding Darrell Revis to that list, of course. I unfortunately could not do it in those two-plus minutes, but it will be changed and it will be added to our official site, and it will be available for our next show, which is next week. Now, before we move on to the Knicks and the Yankees and the Mets, I want to reflect on that interview a little bit. For anybody who missed it, again, he was here for the first 25 minutes, so if you missed it, check it on archives. But when we asked him if he thought he had a successful season, he didn't say yes. He didn't say, you know, it wasn't bad. He said, you know, I wasn't happy with it. I'm pretty sure that's an exact quote. He said, I wasn't happy with it. You know, that's sort of a surprising answer. I mean, he's not going to go and say, oh, I had a great rookie season, you know, and start bragging or... You know, a player is always going to want to say, I want to do better the next year. A player obviously can always do better than the prior year, but I just kind of thought that he straight out said, I was not happy with my season.
Well, I'm actually happy that he said that. It just shows that he worked hard during the offseason to improve next year. And I'm just curious at what numbers he's going to be satisfied with his season. Hopefully, I mean, he did lead the team with 77 solo tackles, but it was the Jets that he was leading. So, yes, it is an accomplishment to lead the team your rookie season, but it was a 4-12 Jets team. So hopefully this season he'll get 100 solo tackles and he still won't be satisfied, and we'll see him increase more and more in his skill. And so, I mean, of course, we all thought he had a great year. Especially for a rookie, started all 16 games. But, you know, it's actually nice to see that he wasn't that satisfied with his season, because it just shows that he's going to keep working hard to improve. And he said he just needs to prove to the Jets and all the Jet fans the amazing cornerback that he is.
Well, it's not that he wasn't that satisfied. He claimed he wasn't satisfied at all. And I understand what you're saying, where you want to, you know, look forward, try harder, and it is a good thing. But, I mean, you want to see some satisfaction out of the player himself. I mean, you want a player to be happy with himself. I mean, you don't want to have a player that's angry at himself and saying to himself that he had a bad season.
Well, I'm sure that he's happy because he's in the NFL. He's where his dreams were his entire life. But he's not satisfied in the way he played, which means he sees room for improvement. That's what he said himself. And
there is always room for improvement, so there's not a problem with that. All right. We have just under an hour remaining in the show. Again, I don't think we're going to use up all that time, but you never know. I want to quickly, before getting into the Yankees and Mets, talk about the New York Knicks. They signed Mike D'Antoni as their coach from the Suns. Now, you know, you look at the good things about him. You know, he's a great offensive coach, and he's, I believe, the last 3 years won 50-plus games with the Suns. So, I mean, it's good in that sense, but the I don't think, personally, he fits in with the Knicks. I don't, you know, because, as I said, he's good at running an offense, but the Knicks' problem really is their defense. I mean, they have more problems than just their defense. I mean, you know, everyone knows that. You know, they pretty much need help with everything. But I don't think D'Antoni fits in with the Knicks. I think they needed a more defensive-minded coach. And personally, I mean, I don't think it would have mattered who coached the team this year, because this team really would not be successful. They need to have a good draft, bring in a franchise player. I mean, even if they brought in God to coach, or Jesus, or Allah, or Buddha, none of those guys would turn the Knicks around this season. But personally, for the future, I think they should have hired a more defensive-minded coach. What are your thoughts on the D'Antoni signing, Evan?
Yeah, I'm not sure that Antoni is going to really be the right coach for the Knicks. And yes, I said Antoni, not D'Antoni, because there is no defense when he's coaching. You watch the Phoenix Suns. Yes, they were very successful while he was their coach, but all they did was score 130 points. And the Knicks don't have Amari Stoudemire and Steve Nash and all the skills that the Suns have. They have a completely different array of players, and so the Knicks aren't capable of scoring that many points a game. They don't have the same skill, and if they don't play defense, then they're just going to get crushed again. And, you know, you saw a few years ago that Brown tried to come and coach the team. It just must be the players. I don't know at what point they're going to realize that they just can't win with this set of players. And it's time for change in players, not just coaching. Isaiah Thomas obviously wasn't successful with the team, but I guess it's his fault that he was the president as well, and he was making these signings. But as the coach, I don't know if – hopefully I'm wrong, because I'm a Knicks fan. I just don't think it's the coach's problem. I think it's the front office. They need new players.
Yeah, I mean, they have some good players. The main problem with the team, which is sometimes hard to get with the team, is chemistry, and the Knicks certainly don't have that. I mean, they have some good players, but these players put together, you don't have yourself a good team. And I like your little Antoni thing with the no D. And that certainly isn't the case. He's an offensive-minded coach. And, you know, I could be wrong because right now the Knicks do need defense. But, you know, thinking it over, if they bring in some good draft players and they bring in a good franchise player, well, all of a sudden you have a couple of good young guys plus a franchise player. It would be a more offensive-minded team plus the offensive-minded coach. So maybe in the future it would fit. But for anyone, you know, expecting a huge turnaround this year, which you shouldn't. You're not going to get it because you still have that same core of players, and, you know, it's going to take a couple of years for them to completely change and adapt to D'Antoni's coaching style. But for this season, his style is not going to fit in, and he's going to win 50-plus games.
But one thing that I do like about his signing is the Knicks will at least be fun to watch. They'll know what they're doing on offense, at least, because right now, they don't know what they're doing ever. If you watch a game, you see one player dribble up the ball, and then he just looks clueless. He doesn't know what to do with the ball once he gets up the court. So hopefully this will solve the offense. Maybe they can get more defensively-minded players. I don't know. The Knicks are
a joke.
But
yeah.
Dolan and Cablevision just made a big purchase. They brought Newsday, or buying Newsday. So Dolan is still...
Is that true?
I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure if they bought Newsday or are buying Newsday.
I have to talk to Jim Baumbach about that. Works for Newsday. Jim Baumbach, if you don't know, he's a Newsday sports writer. He's been on our show about 5 times, I believe. But talk to him about that. It's interesting.
So now Dolan owns a lot of things.
Yeah,
Cablevision, the Knicks, the Rangers, the Madison Square Garden as a whole, the Newsday. It's a whole New York media and sports monopoly.
Yeah, he's got a lot of money, but nobody likes him. And I guess it doesn't really matter when you have that much money. It doesn't need to be liked. Let's take another short commercial break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Mets and the Yankees. So we will be right back.
This is brought to you by MyEDI Media, where media comes to play.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for tuning in to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan Live.
Yes, yes, good evening, fans, and welcome to another edition of Torn Apart. I'm your host, Jonathan Huff, among my co-host, Ronald.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sports Talk NY this Wednesday night. Hope you're all in for the evening and going to hang with us and have a good time.
Well, hello, everybody, and how's it going tonight? This is Minor League Baseball Radio.
Hey, yo, what's up? It's your boy DJ Reggie here on this Sunday night at 9:04 p.m. Central Time. How y'all doing out there wherever you're at in La La Land?
Welcome, everybody, to the Coach Rogue Show.
And what's up, everybody? 7:02, Sunday night, Matt and Joe Radio, back again live. And welcome to the Sports Doc here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vince Lombardi Jr. Show. We are live from Rockland County, New York.
Okay, and welcome. This is Frank, the sports guy. Welcome to Sports Talk Live.
And welcome to the Cemetery and Sheamus Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, people? My name is Kendrick Thomas.
And welcome to this showdown here on Blog Talk Radio.
You can't call him that after the Super Bowl loss. Of course,
so
they still have the Dynasty and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
So
I mean,
who is more successful this season, the Patriots or the Giants?
Here's the question I posed. Game one of the playoffs, who would you rather have on the mound, Johan Santana or Ching Ming Wang? Well, I guess who would you rather have, Moose or Pedro? Johan and Pedro are the answers.
And there's, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, this guy's good, that guy's good. And you know what?
They're all a bunch of
dirtbags if you want my truthful opinion.
And it says, yeah, I had knowledge of him using steroids, and that's still Farage, no matter what he says, or no matter what Brian Baskin says.
If you want 7 years, $150 million, just give it to him. He's worth every penny. The guy is really unbelievable.
So basically what he's saying is that as long as you're hurt, it's okay to use it. I have a sore knee. Let me put HGH in my body. Oh, I didn't know it was going to make my biceps and triceps and my forearms three times the size they were. I used it because I had a sore knee. That's BS.
Team that the people felt were the most poorly run after the Knicks were the Nets at 30%, followed by the Jets at 27%. The Mets then at 16%.
And I guarantee you, if Chad Johnson leaves this year, Carlton Palmer will struggle.
First person we had a chance to talk to was manager of the Wilmington Blue Rocks, Daryl Kennedy. Now, Daryl Kennedy managed Ricky Ball last year for the Royals organization.
Justin Smith deserves to be in the Pro Bowl this season.
I don't think he deserves it because he didn't get it.
And I think one of the big things for the Mets is Jose Reyes. I mean, here's a guy, he had 78 stolen bases last year.
Right.
He had 119 runs scored, but I don't think he really did anything in the month of September.
Apple has teamed up with American Idol to provide American Idol performances on iTunes.
Once again, Apple with their iTunes, shoving it around, shoving it in the face.
Remix by DJ Ray G. Take this out, baby.
One steering wheel, flushed out, gold leaf, phantom hot, and three girls with it. The chrome is shining, passing all the cars on the way. Wind, back wheel spin, and a cassette play.
Just go to myedimedia.com.
Okay, welcome back to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. If you're just tuning in and you're saying, where's Darrell Revis? Well, you missed him. He was here for the first 25 minutes of the show. So if you want to listen to that, you can listen back on the archives. He was with us before we started. He actually called in at about 7:58. So if you listen back to the archives, you can hear him right when the show starts. He was here from 8 o'clock to 8:25. It was a good interview. And again, just listen to that on the archive, blogtalkradio.com/sports7 with Mark and Evan after this show ends. And within 24 hours, you can hear it on our official site at sports7withmarkandevan.webs.com. We just summed up the Knicks. If you have anything to say, call us, 718-508-9443. If you have a user an account on Blog Talk Radio, just talk to us on our Blog Talk Radio web chat. And in just a few moments, you'll be able to IM us on AIM at GMen1021-1780. Currently, the away message is on, but that is on a separate computer, so we will be available for IM in just a couple of moments. All right, now let's talk baseball. And let's start with the New York Mets. And yes, they won 2 out of 3 against the Reds. Yesterday was a doubleheader. But before we talk generally about the Mets and, you know, Ryan Church, he hit another home run today. He's just really fantastic, and, you know, the Mets really have been playing well lately. I want to talk about Johan Santana, because Johan Santana, who did get the win yesterday afternoon, he's not the lights-out pitcher that the Mets were expecting. He's doing his job for sure. He's getting the job done. His numbers are very good, but it's not the lights-out pitcher that they signed. And I want to sort of explain why, and Evan, and then I want your thoughts. I'll tell you, you'll see if you agree with me. But here's the thing. A lot of the games that he played last year, actually every game that he played with the Twins at home, was inside of a dome. He doesn't have that this year. He's playing in, you know, it could be cold, it could be rainy, it could be windy. He didn't have that in a dome. He has this year, and I think that really affects him. And Evan did bring that point up before the season started, and I do think that that does have an effect. And another big thing, going into yesterday's game that he pitched, Evan, do you know how many pitches he averaged a game? And I think this is going to hurt him in the future.
How many pitches did he average a game?
He averaged 105 pitches a game, and in his last two starts, he pitched 116 pitches. So they're leaving him in there a long time. And I'll tell you what, come playoff time or, you know, September and it's really down the stretch, you know, Willie cannot. Now, yesterday was different because it was a doubleheader, so you want to be able to save your bullpen, get the most out of your first starter as you possibly can. But the start, he pitched 116 pitches, but the start before was 116 pitches too. And down the stretch, I think his arm is going to tire. You can't have him go out start after start constantly throwing over 100 pitches. I mean, to average 105 pitches, that's a lot of pitches. I don't think that's going to help his cause. What are your thoughts on Santana so far, Evan?
Well, I have a question for you, Mark. If he averaged 98 pitches, would you say anything?
Probably.
You think that if he averaged, what I'm trying to say is, I don't know, 105 pitches, he's the type of pitcher, he doesn't throw a lot of junk, he just pretty much throws it there and makes you hit it, so I don't think that the high pitch count is what's really the problem. The problem is he's not lights out like they're signing him to be. I completely agree with you, and I've said it on our past shows, that yes, he's getting the wins, but he's high-scoring games. I mean, he's obviously better, but he kind of reminds me of Randy Johnson when the Yankees got him, who he was supposed to be such a great pitcher. He kept getting the wins, but high ERA.
Well, I don't know if you could compare the signing of Randy Johnson with the Yankees to Santana, because Randy Johnson was 40 years old or 41 years old. He was at the back end of his career. I mean, really old. I mean, Santana right now, he's at the height. He's at the prime of his career. So I really don't think that you could compare the two. I mean, when the Yankees signed Randy Johnson, again, he was old. Santana is arguably the best pitcher in the MLB right now. So, I mean, it's really a complete situation. I don't think you could compare the two.
Yeah. All right. Bad analogy. My bad. Well, what I was just trying to say is he's not the lights-out pitcher that yet. The keyword yet that the Mets wanted out of him, because there's still a lot of season left to play, of course, and there's still playoffs, how he can do in the playoffs. Hopefully the Mets will make it there this season, not choke, and come to a crest the second half of the season. So, you know, but other than that, the Mets are doing pretty well, Ryan Church especially. As you said, Mark, he had another home run today.
Yeah, he is really on fire now. If anyone's wondering, Santana 4-2 with a 3.10 ERA and 52 strikeouts so far through the season.
All right, maybe cross out the bad ERA. I guess a 3.10 ERA is pretty good.
He definitely has a good ERA and he's getting the wins. I mean,
yeah.
You can't criticize Santana. Anybody that's mad at Santana is out of their mind. I mean, he's getting the wins. The ERA is good. He's just not the lights-out pitcher that I think Mets fans expected, so I just wanted to get that out there. So that's that. Now, Ryan Church, yes, he is absolutely on fire. He has been unbelievable for the Mets this season. And, I mean, it's great that they have this young core of players. Delgado also starting to step it up. I think he hit a home run yesterday. I mean, Ryan Church now has 7 home runs and 26 RBIs. He's batting .321. And I'm starting to like this Mets team. They're starting to come around. They're doing a good job. And they're right up there in the standings doing exactly what they have to do. And what's your overall opinion of Church and the Mets this year so far, Evan?
I think they're doing well. You know, with the team the Mets have, it's not a question. First, they have of course, when you look at all the top teams, of course you want to see them do well throughout the whole season. But with teams like the Mets, with their past success and the core players they have, it's just more of how they will do the second half of the season and going into crunch time. So right now, I'm pleased with how they're doing, and hopefully their pitching staff will be able to hold up, because you can't win in the MLB without a strong pitching staff. So, you know, Pedro, hopefully he'll start being the lights out pitcher, or just keep doing, if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's still having a strong year, just not lights out. And hopefully John Main and Oliver Perez has been struggling a lot. I usually bring up my fantasy team, so why not do it again? I just had to drop him in my fantasy league. And Mark, sorry, going off on a little of a tangent here. I'm playing you in fantasy this week.
You are.
And it's actually...
It's kind of tight. I think you were winning 6-4 going into today, but my team is not very good because my players are just not stepping up. But instead of, before we go into all fantasy talk, because of course the viewers listening don't know who's on our fantasy team and what's going on, so I don't want to really get into that right now. But the New York Mets right now, second place, 3 games behind, so they need to kind of go on a streak. The Mets do have that kind of consistency of inconsistency where they'll, you know, win 3, then lose 5, and, you know, they got to stop doing that. Because, I mean, you don't want to be a streaky team. And if you're going to be a streaky team, you hope that the bad streak doesn't occur late in September. So the Mets are certainly going to have to change that. 39 minutes remaining in our show. Probably not going to fill up all the time. We'll talk about the New York Yankees now. And they were rained out today, but they played yesterday. Before we start, I just have to throw this out there. Keigawa, besides the fact that he has no clue how to play baseball, when I look at him, the first thing I think about when I see him, he looks exactly like the Asian Napoleon Dynamite. I'm sorry, I just have to throw it out there. He looks like the Asian Napoleon Dynamite. So, just getting that out there. And he also sucks at baseball. So... that's Keigawa. I don't like...
But who would you rather right now, Keigawa or Ian Kennedy?
Well, I would rather have a 4-man rotation with the way those two are pitching because it's really bad, and I don't know what you do. But Darrell Revis, on the other hand, here's...
Darrell Revis? Really?
I'm sorry. Wow. Darryl Rasner. They have the same initials. They have the same initial. That was really confusing.
Well, yeah, Revis was telling us how he did play a lot of sports in high school.
And yes, but none of those were baseball. But I'm sorry, not Darrell Revis, Darryl Rasner. They kind of sound the same. Darryl, and then Revis Rasner. Anyway, Rasner and Mike Messina, I want to talk about them because both of them are really performing well above expectations. Now, I've been saying from the beginning of the season, or way before the beginning of the season, whatever.
Mike Messina will not win more than 8 games. Emphasis, even more emphasis, maybe a few episodes ago.
Evan is getting tired of me saying it week after week, but I have been saying it week after week that I don't think Mike Messina will win more than 8 games a season.
You should have said Mike Messina will not win more than 8 games in his first 10 starts this season. Because that would have been a lot more realistic.
Well, I mean, Mike Messina and Darryl Rasner, both performing well above expectations. I mean, Darryl Rasner has just been fantastic. He's challenging the hitters. Mike Messina doing the same thing. He's finally learning to come inside. And I love those two pitchers. And it's really good because when you have Hughes hurt and, you know, Kennedy and Keigawa struggling, it's important for Mike Messina to be able to step up, the veteran. Pettit's doing well also. Darryl Rasner being called up, doing a great job. And the thing I've seen in both his first two starts, which hasn't hurt him yet, but I hope it doesn't, is 2 first-inning mistakes. He first played the Mariners, gave up a 2-run home run in the first inning, which ended up being the only 2 runs. And then in yesterday's game against Detroit, he gave up a solo shot in the first inning. So I believe a rookie was his first major league home run. So, you know, that's one thing that you have to watch closely for because when you're playing, you know, of course the Tigers have been struggling this season and the Mariners certainly have not been strong offensively. But, you know, if Rasner sees himself playing a game against, the Red Sox, for example, who never seem to lose, and he's given up runs in the first inning, the Red Sox are not going to stop in the first inning. So, I mean, Darryl Rasner needs to find his comfort zone. And he has to stop, and I'm getting an IM, the homer was to Matt Joyce, I was drawing a blank, I'm sorry. But Darryl Rasner really needs to step up in that first inning because I think that eventually is going to hurt him. Those are not going to always be his only runs, and he needs to be strong throughout the whole game. What are your thoughts on the two pitchers, Messina and Rasner?
First of all, Messina, pitching exceptionally well lately. I'm very pleased in the way he's pitching. He's finally learning how to pitch like the old person he is. He no longer thinks that he can overpower the batters. He knows how to work the counts. He's pitching smarter than the batters are thinking. If it didn't really make sense, he's just pitching smart. And then with Rasner, I'm very pleased. You're right. I am a little concerned about his early mistakes, letting up early home runs, but then he gets right into it. So I guess it's better off than him letting up a little bit of a mistake in the first inning and then being lights out the rest of the game than, I guess, being successful in the first inning and then not being lights out the rest of the game. So, but you're right. Hopefully... you know what? I'm very pleased with the way he's pitching. I'm a lot more confident now with him than Ian Kennedy or Phil Hughes. So
now it's great to talk about all the positives, but if you think about it, the case is that in the last 10 games they've been playing 500 ball, 5-5, and their record is 19-19. So overall, they are not doing that good. So despite good outings by Pettit, Rasner, Messina, Chin-Ming Wong, also, who's been great all season. He did get his first loss the other day. Great pitching matchup between two undefeated pitchers, but Chin-Ming Wong did get the loss. I mean, 19-19, New York Yankees in fourth place, 4.5 games back. I mean, they are not doing well. It's time for Robinson Cano to start stepping up. I mean, he's still, hitting balls hard, but it's right defenders. He's got to start getting hits. I mean, it's like enough already. You've played, almost 40 games. It's ridiculous at this point. And, now Wilson Benamick got hurt the other day. You still have A-Rod out and Posada out. I mean, these injuries are not helping the Yankees. So, I don't know what you can expect. But the guys who are there, Robinson Cano, Jason Giambi, let's go. It's time to get a hit. I mean, you can't bat in the 100s the entire season. I mean... A slump is a slump, but you can't. I don't know how long he's going to keep this up. I mean, it's ridiculous. Batting 185, that's terrible. And I don't. It's like very frustrating. Clearly, I'm a Yankee fan, and let's go.
Well, when's the last time that the Yankees had an early season success? It's been a long time. They usually take a while to get into their groove, but once they get into their groove. They really get into their groove, and if they're a 500 team without A-Rod and Posada and other injuries going in and out and players struggling and their pitching struggles, then just think once their team finally gets to full strength, they'll really be able to pull it together. So I'm not very worried right now.
I mean, Al Baladejo got hurt the other day, too, bullpen pitcher for the Yankees. And Chamberlain gave up that three-run.
Chamberlain is human, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I mean, let me tell you something. You have Posada out, you have E-Rod out. The guys who are in have to step up in this situation. Now, I would think the Yankees could turn it around when they have their full lineup, but guys like Cano and Giambi, yeah, and you could even say Damon. It's time to step it up.
Damon's
at this
been doing
point.
Very well.
He's been doing pretty well. It's really Cano and Giambi that's really the frustrating players. It's time to step it up at this point. You need to step up when you don't have your full lineup. I mean, because when you have guys struggling and injuries, it's going to lead to what you have, 500 ball or worse.
Jeter hasn't hit a home run in almost 200 at bats. So, just a lot of struggles. But it's early, 19-19, which means there is a lot of baseball left to play, 125 games to be exact.
Yeah, the baseball season is very long, and, you always got to remember that. You can't always get hung up on the first 40 games or so, but... Sometimes you just look at it and you say it's time to step it up. I mean, Robinson Cano, obviously, he can still hit 30 home runs, bat 310. I mean, he can still do it. And, you know, if it happens, it's just one of those things where you don't even remember that he was struggling. You know, Yankees go deep into the playoffs, World Series. Cano ends up with a good year. It's just all forgotten about. But, you know, at this point in time now where you can't predict the future, you really just say it's time to step it up. I mean, there's no way around it. I kind of like Chad Mohler, though. And Jose Molina is pretty good defensively. So, I mean, some guys are stepping up.
That is incredible. Were you watching the other night when Jose Molina threw the guy out at second on his knees?
On his knees. That was impressive. I mean, he's got a good arm at second base. Excuse me, he's got a good arm behind home plate. So.
Also, Cano had to make a good defensive play to grab it and tag the runner out. So, just hopefully it'll click soon. Girardi, what are your thoughts on Girardi so far?
Okay, here's the thing with Girardi, and I'm glad you brought it up. Days off, that's enough. I hate this days off thing. He's constantly sitting people, oh, he played 8 games, I'm going to sit him. What the heck is that? You got people injured, you have a depleted bullpen, you've got guys like Cano and Giambi that can't step it up. What the heck are you giving days off for? Put the guys that belong in the lineup in the lineup. I mean, and then you who do you bring in? You bring in Shelley Duncan, who's good, but he's not doing good this season. I hate Girardi with his stupid days off every time somebody plays more than 8 games in a row. It's really starting to make me angry. But
I actually disagree with you because it's still early in the season. You don't want to overtire your players, especially when you're missing players. If you're playing the player too much, you don't know if they have these little neck injuries, and all of a sudden a little injury turns into something bigger. One day off isn't going to really hurt you that much. If you need him later in the game, Girardi will obviously put him in as a pinch hitter. So it's not like he's out of the lineup completely. You could still use him if you need him. You're giving your other players a chance to play just in case you need them later in the season. They've played. They're used to it. So I don't really hate these days off.
Well, here's the way I see it. Joe Torre was a manager for the Yankees who was also plagued with a lot of injuries. He didn't have this stupid days off thing every once in a while, and he got to the playoffs with the Yankees every single season.
And what makes you think that Girardi won't? Joe Torre never had, very rarely had a very successful start to a season. Last year, this point in time, I don't even think they had 10 wins yet.
Well, Girardi's not getting that successful start either, and these days off.
500 is not very unsuccessful.
And how much do the days off hurt? I mean, Al Valadeo is a bullpen pitcher. He's not even pitching every game. Alex Rodriguez got hurt. Jorge Posada got hurt. I mean, of course, Hughes has been hurt for a while. Bruni, he's been hurt. I mean, you have all these guys on the DL.
They're still 500.
I guess you could put it that way, but I'd rather have your top as best as the lineup could get each night. I prefer that lineup.
But then let's say another player gets injured and Kelly Duncan never plays, then he's not going to be able to step up. Why not give him a chance to play once a week so he can get in the lineup to get used to it? Because you're going to need a good backup player like that. And players do need rest. Let's say if he plays that night and he's tired, then he may not be as successful, but if he takes a night off, then that means he'll be regenerized.
Regenerized?
You know what? Yes, regenerized. And he'll be able to play better the next few nights.
You should coin that word, regenerize. But, all right. I mean, it's not like days off are necessarily... I mean, I'm not saying that there's... it's not bad for the individual player to have a day off, but... Personally, I prefer to have the best lineup possible. I mean, down the stretch, I guess a day off isn't going to hurt anybody. All right. Well, you know, we are a New York sports show, and the Rangers and Islanders are gone, and the Yankees and Mets are in action. And we spoke about the Knicks news, D'Antoni, and then we had Darrell Revis, cornerback of the New York Jets, on our show. And, you know, not much really going on with the Jets and Giants right now. So,
well, one thing about the Jets, we couldn't talk about it on the show. We couldn't talk about it in the interview because Chris Baker told the news. He was on the He was on Sirius Radio yesterday or the other day, and he told the radio station that he's not very happy with the Jets signing of who was he unhappy at?
They drafted Dustin Keller.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. They drafted Dustin Keller, and Chris Baker is the tight end of the New York Jets, and he was upset, and he said that he may sit out of training camp because, he doesn't want it offended him that they weren't happy with Chris Baker. But by the way that Darrell Revis was talking, it sounds like I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry. Dustin Keller. It sounds like Dustin Keller's going to be playing wide receiver. By the way, Darrell was talking. He said that it's nice to have a wide receiver at the tight end position, but in the NFL, I don't think that he's going to be able to play.
Well, no, he said a wide receiver at the tight end position just because Dustin Keller is known for his hands. He's not known for his blocking. I mean, Dustin Keller's not going to move to a wide receiver.
I think he said something that we may be able to use him in the wide receiver spot.
I mean, occasionally you see it in football games all the time where sometimes you'll line up your tight end in a wide receiver slot, but I don't think in the middle of next season on the depth chart you'll see him listed as a wide receiver. I mean, you could always put a tight end in a wide receiver spot. I mean, the Giants do it a lot with Shockey, but I don't think his position officially will change. The last off with him, Kevin Gilbride actually said that he's not sure if Shockey will still be on the team this season. I want to take the phone call. This person's been waiting for a while, so you are on the air with Sports Heaven.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's Quash from the Sports.
How you doing? Podcast. How you doing, Quash?
First off, a very nice interview with Darrell Revis. Has a lot of inside info that I wouldn't have heard anywhere else. So nice job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, I heard you guys getting a little argument before about the Yankees and their record, and I really think, you know, the Yankees right now, they're rained out today on Mother's Day, but a little Mother Nature, but the Yankees with their 18-18 record, I mean, for the Yankees, that's disappointing. I mean, I know they've had slow starts the last 5 years, but, I mean, that is disappointing. I think a big part of that is A-Rod just hasn't been in the lineup every day, and he hasn't. I mean, the only guy hitting that lineup consistently is Matsui, and he's got an 18-game hitting streak. I mean,
I think his hitting streak ended the other day.
That's over? Okay, so
yeah.
Now he's not hitting. So
yeah,
I mean,
he's on the streak, but he's still doing well.
Yeah, Jeter is coming off his slump a little bit, but I think, the Mets seem to have solved their problems this weekend when they're playing the Reds. I mean, they busted out, I think, 21 runs in the three games, but the Yankees still. I mean, with that pitching staff, the only guy you can count on is Chin-Ming Wong. I mean, Wong can't go out there and be like 27-3 and get the Yankees the pennant here. I mean, they're going to have to start hitting on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, even though Matsui had that very long hitting streak, during the hitting streak, his average actually lowered. So
yeah.
Really?
That's why I don't like hitting streak stats, because if you think about it, you could get one hit in four at bats in all 162 games, and you'll have a 250 average.
When you start getting towards like August and September, and you have a hitting streak, then your average goes up. I mean, for the most part, even if you get one hit a day. I mean, when it's early on in the season, there's less at bats, especially if you're drawing a lot of walks, your average is not going to go up as much, I think. But, Matsui is definitely hitting very well. I mean, and look at the top 10 guys in the AL in home runs, RBI, and run scored, and you would expect at least one Yankee, at least maybe even two Yankees in those categories. Not one Yankee is in the top 10 in home runs and RBIs.
Yeah, certainly they're power hitters. I mean, even a guy like Giambi is certainly struggling. But the one guy with the Yankees, even though Matsui did have that hitting streak, the one guy who I wish is up at the plate when I want to hit is Bobby Abreu. I mean, he seems to always come through with a hit. I mean, he's really the guy that, I mean, he doesn't have, like, any hitting streak like Matsui, but he seems to always get a hit. And
yeah,
I love Bobby Abreu.
The Yankees held on to Abreu in the offseason. Because that's one guy when you have A-Rod going down, he's one that you can fit very nicely in the 3, 4, 5 spot in the order, and he always comes through in the clutch. I mean, that's what he was a Philly. He was known for doing that. So, I mean, yeah, he's done a tremendous job for the Yankees in the clutch this year. But, I mean, you know, guys like Damon, he came out of his slump a couple days ago, hit a home run, I think, a couple of base hits. But, I mean, the Yankees really need to get that hitting going because before you guys talk about Darryl Rasner and of course, now Phil Hughesland DL, and who can forget Ian Kennedy. I mean, and even Messina and Pettit haven't been on their game this season. So, I mean, really the offense has to kind of, you know, get the slack, and they're not doing that.
You're absolutely right that some players need to step up, and they are not doing that, and as a result, Yankees playing 500 ball.
Also, I was wondering, when you guys had Darryl Revis on before, were there any contract issues with the Jets now that Revis getting, maybe he's getting some sort of gig on your program?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I spoke to his agent this afternoon. He said keep the interview benign, which pretty much means nothing controversial.
Well,
and we did ask a few, you know, opinion questions and things that potentially could be controversial. We did cut some questions out, though. But he said, you know, keep it benign and he'll come on again. So maybe we could get him to come on again.
No doubt about that. All right, guys, good luck and... Before I go, just give me your picks. I don't know if you got into this yet. Give me your picks on Penguins, Flyers, and Red Wings, and Red Wings and their series.
All right, I'm gonna pick the Red Wings, and I'm picking a big upset by the Flyers. Actually, I'm kind of feeling.
I actually don't think it'll be an upset. I think, the Flyers do have more experience, even though of course they have Crosby and Malkin there, but. The Flyers, even though they're not the favorite of the series, I don't see it being upset the Flyers winning that series because, they have more playoff experience. Daniel Briere is a playoff god.
The experience hasn't really seemed to be an issue. I mean, the Rangers had a lot of experience with Drury, Gomez, Shanahan, and Yager, and they were able to overcome the Rangers, so I think they'll be able to overcome any team that comes their way.
Well, the Penguins are running out of momentum.
I'm taking the Flyers anyway.
All right.
And
all right, guys. I'll see you later on.
I don't get my picks.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to choose the Red Wings. And then in the Eastern Conference, I'm going to choose the Penguins, continuing the Rangers' fate. And I think that the Penguins are the real deal this year.
And you guys think that Detroit's going to win it all? I'm rooting for Detroit because I despise both of those Pennsylvania hockey teams. But what do you guys pick on if Detroit's going to make it over Dallas, no question. But what do you guys pick? Was Detroit winning it all?
Yeah, we'll go for that. I'll take that. I'll take Detroit winning it all.
So Crosby will have to
wait
another
year. This is the year for the Penguins.
So in other words, Crosby's going to have to wait another year.
Well,
in Mark's opinion, yes. In my opinion, no.
All right, guys.
All right, Klaus. Thanks for the call.
No problem. Peace out. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Ethan Klaus of the Sports Docket.
Does he hear me? Am I on the phone?
You're on the phone. I can hear you now. Occasionally, I see a few more people popping into our chat room, and I know we're featured in the Blog Talk Radio blog and on the front page. If you're looking for Darryl Revis, he was here from 8 o'clock to 8:25. However, he was actually with me and Evan from 7:58 to 8:25. So he was here right at the beginning of the show. If you miss it, catch the archive. Don't hesitate to do so. But as for right now, you know, we spoke about some Jets and Giants news. Rangers and Islanders, there's nothing to say. Yankees and Mets and Knicks we covered, so that pretty much sums up the day for New York sports. And again, thank you, Darryl Revis, for coming on to the show. It was a real pleasure to have you. And
happy Mother's Day, if there's any mothers listening to the show.
Happy Mother's Day to all whom it applies. And we'll end here with our disclaimer. Sports 7 with Mark and Evan is a sports radio show created for informing the public of the latest sports news and insights. Our show is broadcast over the internet to blogtalkradio.com from Jericho, New York. The views, comments, and statements of our interviews and guests do not necessarily reflect that of the host. We do not also claim ownership of any material used on the sports show or on the website, including musical beds, instrumentations, voiceovers, effects, team logos, league, and team names otherwise stated. If you want to remove anything, sports7withmarkandevan@yahoo.com. Also, during the week, I completely refaced our official site. I added a new page. And last week I had added even another page. If you haven't been to our official site, you want to go there. Tons of stuff. New York sports news, latest scores of all teams and all sports, bios of Evan and I, info on past guests, info on upcoming shows, info on past shows, the opportunity to make a donation to the show, and the advantages of doing that are on the donation page. And you can find that all at sports7withmarkandevan.webs.com. That's Mark with a K, Evan spelled E-V-A-N. We will be back next week. Tune in next week, same time, same place, same great show. It's Sports 7 with Mark and Evan live out of Jericho. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Branup, and we'll see you next week. And also on the website, there's a picture of each of us so you can see the faces behind the voices.
That is correct. So enjoy that. And we will leave you with the sweet voice of Neil Diamond in Sweet Caroline.
Have a good one.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowin', but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Touching warm, reaching out, touching.